What's up, Internet, and welcome back to the Engadget Podcast. I'm Senior Editor Devinder Hardwar. This week, I'm joined by podcast producer Ben Elman. Hey, Ben.
Hello.
Hello. We are here. A lot can change in a week, apparently, for us at Engadget and for us in America. So if we are a little, not as funny this week, folks, it's because we're reeling from the results of the election, and please bear with us. But hey, there's new stuff happening. There's news. I don't know how this happened, Ben, but apparently, four of the biggest devices to come this year all review embargoed within the same week. So I ended up having
two days after Election Day.
But also, like, that's literally the only thing I can think of. So in this episode, we're going to be talking about the PlayStation 5 Pro, which I spent the weekend with and spent a lot of time with for Spider-Man 2. Apple's M4 Max, in particular the Mac Mini and the two MacBook Pros. Thankfully, Mr. Steve Dent over in France, our wonderful correspondent there, is doing the iMac review. So we were able to get that one out there. So yeah, that's what we'll be talking about and a little bit about, you know, the state of the world and what we're thinking. As always, folks, if you're enjoying the show, please subscribe to us on iTunes or your podcatcher of choice. Leave us a review on iTunes. Drop us an email at podcastengadget.com. And yeah, we typically do live streams around 10:45 a.m. Eastern on Thursdays. We didn't do it this week because I fear the pressure of an audience when all of this is so fresh would have just destroyed me. So that is what's happening there. But yeah, Ben, I hope you're okay. The day after the election, I was reeling. I had this conversation with my daughter, Ben, where my daughter, Sophia, who is 6 years old, we were like, okay, she should know who Kamala Harris is. She should know, like, what is happening and why this is potentially a monumental and history-changing election for America. Didn't go out that way. So she knew who Kamala Harris was. She has heard sound
bites. The way that you were explaining it to her was like, hey, Kamala Harris has like a similar ethnic background to us. And okay, all right.
Well, also, woman can be president. Like maybe lady president could be a thing that she could potentially.
All of that wrapped together. It's important.
All that wrapped together. Anyway, I have not like been anti-Trump to her, but she is just. She's heard him on the news. She's heard words he said. And she was like, that guy, why? Why is that guy running for president? Or why are people going for him? So to explain to her that Donald Trump won, she said, well, I guess I'll have to do it then.
Wow.
So that was an immediate response, like not even prompted by me.
From the mouths of kids. Oh my God.
But also some of her friends in town too, like some of the little girls she goes to school with. Same response to their parents, apparently, like all unprompted. So who knows what this is gonna all trigger. But yeah, folks, we're gonna have a longer discussion about what this means about Trump 2.0 and another Trump term.
And what it means for tech.
Because he has been so buddy-buddy with Elon Musk, it actually does intersect a lot with the tech world, and we can talk a lot about like what Elon Musk means there, too. We also talk about science stuff occasionally, too, and the whole thing about RFK Jr. Being in charge of the FDA, and he's already threatening to like deregulate a large swath of stuff. That is kind of within our wheelhouse when it comes to like science. So that's terrifying. There's just a lot of terrifying things going on, but We're just going to focus on the gadgets, folks, for now. I want to talk about the PlayStation 5 Pro, which is a very curious thing. And also, I guess, dear Sony, don't launch a major product right the day after the election, because you do not know how people are going to be feeling or what they're going to be doing. Yeah, maybe some people will just stress buy this thing. But yeah, this is a $700 game console. We had talked a bit about when it was announced, and I have some thoughts. But Ben, like, I don't know if you saw the review or saw, you know, other coverage of this thing. What are your initial thoughts on the PS5 Pro? Is it something you would want to get?
I mean, when we were talking about it a few weeks ago with Jess, I was like, oh my God, this is something that I might actually buy. Because right now I have a PS5 under my desk. I have a combined work and play situation where the PS5 is connected to the same screen that I use for like all of my work stuff. Also, that is my best 4K screen.
Do you have a TV, or are you one of those folks with no TV at all?
I don't have a TV right
now. There you go. That's why. But okay.
But this PS5 is something that I'm borrowing from my girlfriend.
Okay.
And I was like, oh, I really want to play Helldivers. And wow, all of a sudden, I don't really want to play Helldivers. I don't manage democracy. I don't know.
Yeah.
but when Jess was talking about the PS5 Pro, I was like, okay, well, eventually I'm going to have to get my own PS5. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And this seems really good. This seems like a great platform on which to play Control yet again.
Yeah. Or Alan Wake 2, which.
Or Alan Wake 2, because it's all in the same universe.
Yeah.
But I was also like, I cannot justify this. It is really hard to justify because it's so expensive. I also think that it's interesting that you position this article as a super-powered $700 console for gamers who won't.
That's exactly
keyword there. A PC.
I think.
Tell me more about that.
So I've been a PC gamer for a while, especially since I'm the one who has to test out our video cards and stuff like that. So just by nature of my job, I end up with these things, and I have tried, folks, to send these things back to NVIDIA, and they literally do not respond to my emails. I think because if people started sending the review gear back to them, they would have to deal with it, just like I have to deal with it, because I have a closet full of old gear that I can't do anything with right now. So anyway, I have video cards. That's why I've just been leaning on PC gaming more. We've talked about how the consoles have essentially just become PCs. You know, they're running AMD hardware. They're running AMD GPUs. They have a lot of the same graphical features as PC releases. So the whole notion of releasing a game across PC and consoles is much more of a reality now, something even Sony has started doing. But the reason you go for PCs is that you get, at a minimum, 60 FPS gaming guaranteed. Usually at decent resolutions too. So even a middling video card will get you like 1440p at 60 FPS. And the thing about the PlayStation 5 and the Xbox Series X and this entire console generation is that they existed within a world of compromise. You know, Spider-Man 2, a lot of the major games usually have two different modes. They have a fidelity mode, which is typically trying to render at 4K or close to 4K with like ray tracing and the good stuff, but at 30 FPS, which to my eyes now, looks like trash. I'm sorry. Like, unless I'm playing on a Nintendo Switch where I'm like, okay, you are somehow running on a chip from like 2016, yet Tears of the Kingdom still visually looks incredible. I can stomach a short or a low frame rate there. I cannot do that on something like Spider-Man, where I know Sony had hundreds of millions of dollars to like produce this game. And I know there's hardware capable of running this game at 60 FPS. So this compromise is less of a thing with the PS5 Pro. That's pretty much it. There's a pro mode in Spider-Man 2 and a lot of these supported games, which is just, hey, you want 60 FPS? Great. Do you want a lot of those ray tracing features? Great. Do you want close to 4K rendering, which they do with the thing called the PlayStation Super Sampling thing? We just call it Pisser. But it's upscaling a lower resolution to look like 4K using AI, similar to NVIDIA's DLSS. If you want all of those things, now you can finally get it. It just costs you $700. The thing is, if you had a gaming PC over the last decade, you've had like this capability for a long time too. So I feel like this is not a major selling point or a console I think even PC gamers will want to get, unless they want to be first to those Sony exclusives. But for everybody else, if you just want to sit down in front of your couch, you don't want to deal with Steam or updating drivers or whatever, and you just want a really powerful console that can make your nice TV look good, you know, to give you the full glory of Spider-Man, then that's why. That's why I'm saying this is precisely the console for the people who want fidelity but do not want to deal with the mess of a gaming PC.
So what would you say to the idea that maybe this is proof that game consoles are the thing for kids? You just buy it, it's self-contained, you don't need to worry about upgrading it or maintaining it all that much, and like maybe this is the best option to like get a kid into 4K, 60 FPS.
I think you're grossly overestimating the capabilities of adults in this situation. So
yeah, okay.
First of all, yeah, kids will not be buying a $700, parents will not buy a $700 console for their kid.
Yeah, for a kid. In most cases.
Yeah. It was already a stretch to be like, hey, mom, can you get me the PlayStation 5, which is close to $500? That was already...
The 5 is for 500.
Yeah, that was already a tough stretch. I don't think it... No, not necessarily for kids, but it's for most people who do not want to deal with the the annoyances of PC gaming. Just yesterday, I started trying to play...
Because PC gaming is an enthusiast thing.
It's an enthusiast
thing. And it leads to a bunch of other enthusiast things. You know, building a PC is a enthusiast activity in its own right.
Even if you buy a PC, even if out of the box, PC gaming is more annoying because you're dealing with multiple storefronts. Just yesterday, I want to start playing Dragon Age The Veilguard, right? Launch that thing. It spent maybe 5 to 10 minutes processing the... The textures. It does like a texture pre-packaging thing before you launch a game for the first time. That took a long time. And then I'm ready to play now. My game controller was not, for some reason, not pairing correctly to my PC. So I was like, okay, I guess I have to go find another controller. I guess I have to go make sure it's charged. I got to add it to Bluetooth. Oh no, the Bluetooth is not good. I guess I got to go find the receiver to plug into the Bluetooth or plug into USB so I have better reception for this. Like, it's a whole thing. 30 minutes later, after I sat down to start playing, I could actually start playing.
Yeah.
And that would not happen on the PlayStation 5. You know, you will wait to install the game and download it. But that whole process, that comedy of errors, would not be a thing. I do it because I want to be like, I want to play a lot of games at the best quality possible. Right now, I have an RTX 4080 Super in this computer. That's a killer-ass GPU. But like, I could do 4K gaming and crazy ray tracing features. But you have to stomach all these annoying setup things. So anyway, that is the setup for the PlayStation 5 Pro. I really like it as a machine for this specific audience, but I was very clear in my review that it is not something for everybody. It is not a replacement for your PlayStation 5. If you have like an older TV or you do not care as much about the whole 60 FPS getting all the graphical flourishes thing, get a normal PlayStation 5. Get one used even, because you could probably get a decent deal on it. Jessica Conda also contributed to this review, and she put down some of her thoughts on some of the games too, Wi-Fi speeds, things like that too. And I think we both came down with the takeaway that this is a really good system for the people who are like PlayStation diehards who want to play The Last of Us Part 2 in the best possible way, Spider-Man 2 in the best possible way. Spider-Man 2 was a game I spent like maybe 5 hours with it when it came out. But now I'm just like, I'm ogling this game, Ben, because it's like, I'm back in New York. I see reflections off of buildings. The water is reflected perfectly. Moving, swinging around the city is just beautiful. I am like, and this one goes into the other boroughs too. So it's like, I'm gliding around Queens, looking at potential neighborhoods where I'd like to move back to eventually. The real humble brag for me is that I'm playing games on my projector, folks. That's just how my basement is set up. So I'm playing nice. Spider-Man 2 at 120 inches in, you know, 4K with all the beautiful stuff. And it's an incredible experience. So for me, that's worth $700. I think for gamers who care about fidelity, that is totally worth that price. For most other people, no. And yeah, the start of my review is essentially, if you're happier with your PS5, if you think $700 is too much, do not buy this thing. Seems pretty simple to me. Yeah.
So it is a set it and forget it, or buy it and, you know, not worry about upgrading it or anything situation. But if you are already very happy with PS5, then I don't know. Also, I'm looking at the list of games that are enhanced, like on PS5 Pro launch day, and it's basically anything that you could imagine. You know, it's the big games. I'm seeing Alan Wake, I'm seeing the most recent Assassin's Creed game, I'm seeing all the Spider-Mans, but also like all of the all the sports games too, Madden and 2K and all of that stuff. And so I'd also be interested to see how much it grows. Because the last time we were talking about the PS5 Pro, I was asking, like, okay, how long is the lifespan of this going to be before the PS6 comes in? So I'd be really interested in seeing how much this list grows between now and when the first rumblings of the PS6 come out.
I think now that this exists, Ben, like, here's the thing. Sony and a lot of these third parties are also putting their games to PCs. So it is basically not that much more work to just target a slightly higher powered machine now that they know this exists and they can support it within the whole PlayStation pipeline. So I think, well, for big budget games, they're certainly going to do it. It's going to be a big calling card for that. Sony wants more people to buy these things. This system probably has like 3 years, maybe, to be the leading PlayStation until we hear more about a PlayStation 6 or something like that.
That's a pretty good amount of time,
sure,
I'd say.
Sure, and especially if you've held off and you've not bought a PlayStation 5 of your own yet and you were intrigued. This is a good machine. You know, it is actually smaller physically than the original PlayStation 5. It's a little denser too, because it's using like a newer processing or a newer chipset. So all that stuff, like, it's just a less annoying machine and a lot less compromise. There is still some compromise though, because it's not as fast as like a RTX 4070. I don't think it's as fast as something like that, because even Spider-Man 2 has a pro fidelity mode where they're like, oh, you want more ray tracing? We got you. We got all the ray tracing. How do you like 30 FPS again though? Are you okay with that? The compromise is still there. That exists in PC gaming too. If you're trying to like eke out power from an older video card, you're always making those choices. So that's just the way it is. But as a normal machine, I think it's pretty good as a console for gamers who need that sort of thing. Yeah.
And especially if you're coming from the console world where 30 FPS is still more common, you don't really miss what you've always known. So if you go to a friend's house or something and you see the 60 FPS performance, you might be like, wow, okay, that's amazing. But
I think a lot of people
remember all of the fun that you had with your 30 FPS thing, and think about your bank account.
And you can still do 60 FPS just with like less fidelity. And I think for most people, you could still play Spider-Man 2 and it looks pretty good on a normal PlayStation 5. I still play in performance mode, but you lose all those reflections. You lose like a lot of the nice touches that make you feel like, wow, this is a next generation machine. So do with that what you will. Check out the review by me and Jessica Conda over at Engadget. Let's talk about those Macs. Ben,
because it just keeps coming.
It just keeps coming. Guys, I have written maybe 10,000 words. Like, not all of them are in the reviews, but I've written a lot of words since last Saturday. So it was a really, this week is a weird headspace for me, because it's sort of like we're barreling towards this election, which is very consequential. Still working, still typing. I don't get to see my kids like a lot this weekend because I need to spend time with these things. Okay, election day.
Which just means that you were like stuck in your own basement and you could probably hear them going like,
oh yeah,
like,
yeah,
running around upstairs.
That's my life. But also, election is happening. I was like, still gotta write, still gotta do stuff. Oh, those numbers do not look good late on election night. Okay, I'm still writing. Yep. This is a crazy week that I'm pretty sure I will remember, is just like how weird it is. But the new Apple Macs, the Macs with the M4 chips are here. Specifically, I reviewed the Mac Mini with an M4 Pro chip, and the two MacBook Pros, the 14-inch and the 16-inch. The 14-inch had a base M4 chip. The 16-inch had an M4 Pro chip as well. I was a little disappointed by that, because last year Apple sent us the the M3 Max chip on the 16-inch MacBook Pro. And that thing, like, just to see the wide swath of power that those chips covered, that was a really interesting thing to see. We didn't get an M4 Max system this year. That's a shame. I'm just going to have to, like, project forward from, like, what I think that'll be. But I will say,
extrapolating.
And you can go see, if you go look at Geekbench's benchmark comparison sites and other places, there are publicly available benchmarks to see how fast those machines are. Let me just say, these chips are something. Like, the base M4 is a pretty nice upgrade over the M3 and certainly over the M1 and the M2. And I really like the base 14-inch MacBook Pro, because it's still $1,600, but now it comes with 16 gigabytes of RAM. Now it has actually 3 USB-C ports, whereas last year it was just 2 on one side. So it is a lot less compromised than the last model was. Yeah.
Did you say that the base was the same price now, even though it has 16 gigs of RAM, where otherwise it would have been more expensive?
Yeah, dude. Like, that, you were here. We just talked about that. That is the new...
I'm just surprised, because, like, why were they trying to extract another $200 from you before then?
Because they could. Because they could, Ben. Come on.
Yeah, yeah.
This is how it all goes. But
it's Apple.
I will tell you, they are ready to extract more money from you if you want to upgrade that RAM. The Mac Mini in particular, like, the RAM upgrade prices are just... So anyway, everything comes with 16 gigabytes standard. They did not increase the base prices of those machines. So I think that's pretty useful. I think these are fast chips. But the M4 Pro chip in particular, on the Mac Mini and the MacBook Pro 16 for me, is kind of astonishing. It is just so fast. It is faster in Geekbench 6 and Cinebench 2024. It is faster than the M3 Max was last year. It is so fast in terms of multi-threaded Geekbench 6 scores that the gulf between was super high. It was like 22,850 points in both the Mac Mini and very similar to that on the 16. That is an incredibly high number, Ben, because the base M4 model got like 14,000 points. Most computers we tested this year typically get multi-threaded scores around 11 to 12,000. The M4 Pro is so fast. It is as fast as like two laptops put together.
Wow.
Two modern laptops put together. Like, that's just insanity. And also Apple's cores, like their CPU cores, even the single threaded benchmarks are way, way higher than everybody else. So this is just kind of how they grow these chips. You know, the M4 and M4 Pro, they just have more cores than the base M4. The M4 Max adds more cores, adds more GPU cores. The M4 Pro is just insanely, insanely fast. So on the Mac Mini, that means if you spend the extra money for that version, which I believe is $1,299, for $1,399, that's the Mac Mini. The Mac Mini starts at $599 with the base M4, but for $1,399, it is a full-on workstation and much more powerful GPU and everything. What were you going
to
say?
Mm-hmm. It seems to me like Apple has really hit its stride, maybe with the M3, but seems definite with the M4, because remember, it was just a few years ago that they said, okay, we're moving to this completely different ARM-based design. It also came out pretty slowly because I think there were some growing pains with the ARM-based design, now, but I mean, also listen, it was the pandemic, it was just difficult to fabricate
they
stuff.
They announced this, I think building was a hard thing, but when they launched that in late 2020, when I reviewed the 13-inch MacBook Air or the 13-inch MacBook Pro and the MacBook Air with the M1, insanely fast. And the MacBook Air had no fan, and like they were delivering speeds beyond laptops and Intel systems that we were seeing up until that point. Apple's just continuing to grow that. I'll also say about the Mac Mini, we've talked about this, like this thing is adorable. It is very, very small, measures 5 inches by 5 inches across. It's just 2 inches tall. It looks more like an oversized Apple TV 4K than it does a Mac Mini. Like I took pictures of them side by side. They're very similar design-wise. The only difference is the Mac Mini has a metal case and the Apple TV has a very plasticky, shiny case. But it's a very similar thing. There are USB-C ports up front, which is something we complained about last time.
Finally.
Headphone jack is up front. I also complained about that last time because I know video editors.
Also, amazing that a Mac Mini has a headphone jack when you haven't had a headphone jack on any iPhone for years.
Sure. The Macs have not dumped headphone jacks yet. Other people have. Dell has, but Apple has not, even on the MacBook Air, right? So,
well, and if you think about it in the context of like, oh, this is supposed to be the machine for like creative professionals such as myself use wired headphones. Now, I would say that like I use wired headphones only when I'm out, because right now I'm plugged into an audio interface. Headphones are plugged into the audio interface, which then plugs into USB-C.
Which is also the thing, I saw some people complaining, well, if you have speakers, then your speaker cable has to be up front, right? And I'm thinking, no, actually the video editors or audio editors who really need speakers are going to have studio monitors that are plugging into an audio interface or something that just plugs into a USB-C port on the back. There are also USB speakers, I think, that Mac people have really liked. So I don't think you'll really need the headphone jack for speakers, is my thinking. Or at least I don't think most Mac users would. But anyway, this thing is super, super tiny, super cool. The only thing is, physics. You can make it super hot. If you turn on the high performance mode, when I was running the Cinebench multi-threaded benchmark, it sounded like it was ready to take off. It sounded like it was a little drone because there's a big fan at the bottom that sucks in all the cool air. That's just something you'll have to get used to. I'll also say that is maybe the differentiating factor between going for this and going for Mac Studio, which I believe costs $19.99.
I also wonder if there are going to be any third-party things. You know, like, everybody I know has a pad that they put the gaming laptop on that has its own fans as well to help with airflow.
I mean, I don't...
Would there be something that you put your M4 Mac Mini on?
No, like, because those are laptops, and because you can just, like... Those have trouble sucking in air. This thing has sort of a contoured base that's sitting on a little bit of the fan base, and it has a big fan. The problem is some workloads are just really, really powerful. And I think if that is the case for you, if you think you'll be stretching it a lot of times, like daily in a shared office or something where it'll be annoying, then you probably need a Mac Studio. If you are a super high-end video editor, that's just the way. But if you're just editing on the weekends or you're mainly a photographer who occasionally does videos, I think this is perfectly fine for most people. So that's the Mac Mini. It's great for $599. Also comes with 16 gigabytes of RAM. Like, just what a wonderful little desktop that would be, I think, for a lot of people. Like, Ben, you said you were considering it, right? Even the base model?
I was considering it because, well, not the base model, but the M4 Pro, again, because I just want to future-proof as much as possible.
I don't even think you need the M4 Pro, is the thing. Like, the M4 chip is still really, really, it's pretty good. As I told you, the single-threaded score is still pretty good. So that's most of the work you're doing. The M4 score I got on the MacBook Pro 13-inch or 14-inch is still faster than most other laptops this year. It's faster than every other system this year. The second fastest multi-threaded Geekbench score I saw this year before I started testing these was the Surface Laptop 7 with the Snapdragon X Elite. And we talked about like what good performance that chip was. You would be fine with the base M4 is the thing.
The thing I really want to see that is so specific to me is a comparison between maybe an M1 Pro, because that's the one I'm using right now, and a M4 or M4 Pro, hopefully both, on the specific tasks that I frequently ask them to do, which is like Isotope RX, like spectral denoise or something. All of the stuff that makes the podcast sound just a little bit better. You know, if you've ever recorded something off of, you know, just straight off of a mic or on voice memos or something, you'll hear just like a little bit of fuzz in the background. That's called a noise floor. And so all of the stuff that I'm doing at the very beginning as I'm starting to edit the show is stuff to remove the noise floor, remove hums that are in the like background. Dev, I have to say for you, there are a good number of hums just because you're in the basement, probably near the machinery of your whole house.
No, I'm not near. You're probably hearing, our camera has a fan, like the camera use has a fan or something. But yeah, go.
But whatever. Yeah, so I'm doing a lot of like noise floor removing, hum removing, and I remember how drastically different it was between the 2012, yes, it was a very old chip, 2012 Intel chip versus this M1. That was a 10x difference, and I know for a fact because some of the processes I was doing in this audio cleanup were 10 minutes, and they went down to 1 minute
Sure.
So what I would really like to see, what I'm hoping, like, hey, Isotope, the company, just make a YouTube video comparing the render times between these different chips. I would love it, and I bet at least like 100,000 other music and general audio workers would also love it. So we can compare and see, okay, you know, maybe we might want to upgrade now.
Are those things GPU bound? Are they using MPUs? Like, do you know what is powering those specific filters? If it is GPU stuff, I think you'll see a big benefit here too. If you just type in like M1 Pro versus, Mac M1 benchmarks, you'll get to like the Geekbench comparisons and things like that too, to give you a sense of how it would be. I think Cinebench is probably a good one for you because that's very encoding heavy, which is tapping to both the CPU and the GPU. Anyway.
Yeah.
I think you would
actually
see some
speaking
benefit.
Of the Cinebench mm-hmm. score, you said that the M4 Pro's graphics were in line with NVIDIA's RTX 4070. That's a graphics card that came out last year. That's pretty great.
I forget if it's last year, but it's the laptop version of that card. But still,
I went out and looked because I was really curious when the 4070 came out, and it was released on April 13th, 2023.
There you go. But yeah, that was last year, and I think that's pretty impressive for because these graphics cores are tied to a little mobile chip, and NVIDIA's graphics cards, even in laptops, are still in like a big dedicated chunky spot. Like they're drawing a lot of power, they're doing a lot of work. It is impressive, like what Apple has been able to accomplish here. I would say anyway for you, Ben, if you got a base Mac Mini, I think you would be fine. I think it would do similar work and honestly better work when it comes to like some of the AI processing. Mac Whisper, I did some of those comparisons, definitely noticed some big gains over the M3 chip and the M4. So this is just a great computer. Mac Mini, you could put this anywhere. You can make a little server, you can make a little family computer if you already have a monitor, keyboard, and mouse. Kind of a no-brainer. And it's also kind of weird how there are just like no good Windows alternatives to this. I know they exist. I saw the HP Elite Mini that people were talking about. That is a business computer. That is for IT workers. You know, like they're not really, Microsoft and other people aren't really hyping up, oh, here's a cute little Windows PC that you could plug your monitor into. No, it's all laptops and it's all surfaces for them. The MacBook Pros, nothing special there. Like nothing majorly different. But it's the same thing with these chips. The M4 is pretty good. The M4 Pro on the 16-inch MacBook Pro is so freaking fast. If you have been holding off on upgrading to a new Mac, if you have an M1 system, if you have a freaking Intel system, this is an insanely good time to upgrade because you will notice the difference. Like just hugely powerful stuff. The MacBook Pros are also slightly brighter for SD color. They get up to 1,000 nits now for SD, you know, the color range. I also noticed outside in direct sunlight, they looked a little clearer. It was just easier to see what was going on too. So I'm a big fan. We like the MacBook Pros. The camera is better. The webcam is now a 12 megapixel shooter. It supports center stage. It supports that weird desk view thing where you can tilt it down and it'll show what's in your hand, which is great for showing off stuff on, you know, live streams and podcasts. That feature works now too.
I imagine that would be really useful when making review videos of something small.
It could be.
The first thing that came to mind was the Rabbit R1, even though the tech behind it wasn't that great. It is a very cute device.
It is. I mean, listen, you could just hold your phone over a thing, you know, but when you're doing a live stream where you can't like be juggling a camera, then it's helpful to have something like that. So we like the MacBook Pros, scored them really high. I think the main thing that I noticed and my main problem is that the upgrading prices, especially for the Mac Mini, are just wild. If you want 32 gigabytes of RAM instead of 16 gigabytes, you have to spend an extra $400. 32 gigabytes of RAM does not cost $400, folks, even for laptops. But it's expensive because Apple has to build them into its chip, so it's buying specialized modules. If you want to get a 1 terabyte SSD instead of a 256 gigabyte SSD, another $400. A 1 terabyte SSD NVMe thing, like you can buy that for under $100 right now. And they don't need like the.
And that might be the argument. Like you just have another thing sitting on top of the Mac. Well, I was thinking about doing it for a Mac Mini.
Yeah, you could just have like a external storage thing. Yeah. It's kind of obscene what Apple does here sometimes. I will say it is nice that the Pro chips and the Max chips have Thunderbolt 5 support now too, which is much faster than Thunderbolt 3 and 4. So there's that. You could get a really fast external enclosure and plug in hard drives there.
So something I'm curious about with these new MacBook Pros is you said that the screen is brighter. Did you try to turn off all the lights in your little basement office and just turn that thing all the way up and see how bright it really seemed to your eyes? Because it's supposed to be able to fight sunlight, right?
I'm surrounded by bright-ass screens all the time. So that actually, like the 4K monitor I'm looking at, I think maxes out at like 1,200, 1,500 nits maybe sometimes in HDR. going in sunlight is the best way to do it, or going to a really brightly lit room, because your eyes, if you're doing a fully dark room, your eyes will just be contracting so much when it starts to get bright that it's really hard to tell the difference between different bright screens. But I certainly felt like I was outside on my in my backyard working in direct sunlight, and I could read a little bit better. I could see the images more clearly. That's a really useful thing.
You often are. When you dial into all of our like show planning meetings, about 90% of the time, you're sitting out on your deck, which is
the way to go.
A nice amenity.
Nice amenity. Listen, there are a lot of downsides to living in Georgia, especially now, but it's going to be 80 degrees today, and it is November 7th, so I take advantage of that.
It was alarmingly close to 80 degrees in New York also.
Yeah, that is a bigger problem. That is a much bigger problem, and I worry about the state of New York. I worry about, we would love to resettle in New York City at some point, likely Queens. And Zillow and everywhere else, they are listing the climate warnings. Flood warning, flood zone,
yeah.
Be careful. That's actually a really good thing, because a lot of properties around New York are in flood zones. But it's something to consider.
The topography of the New York City area is just all crazy. Some of it is deep in flood zones, and some of it is, 80 or more feet above sea level. It's wild.
Just wild. I believe it was the most recent Kim Stanley Robinson book that was The Ministry of the Future. I think it was that one. But that was the one with the submerged New York City, right? Or he did another one. I forget. One of those had it was basically set in a waterlogged, submerged New York City. And, just like the way he kind of mapped it out, was like, yep, below Prospect Park, just all underwater, like naming the streets like Ocean Parkway or everything. And we're like, okay.
Actually an ocean.
Actually leads into an ocean. People forget this. So anyway, where were we? Zillow? Something?
We were talking about the weather, but let's get back to MacBook Pros.
The Macs are good. The Macs are good.
The Macs are good.
It's a good year for Macs. It's a good year for the Mac Mini. I didn't really dive too much into the Apple Intelligence features because they're just kind of there. It's nice. I did a lot of Whisper Sync transcription because I need to do that for podcasts occasionally, and it's certainly better on the M4 chips. But also, I think a lot of people will just be recording meetings or something or their own voice memos, and that's the sort of transcription they'll be dealing with. So for in all those respects, the neural engine and the transcribing capabilities are also pretty good. So
yeah, maybe I'll try and transcribe a hour or so long episode of the Engadget podcast with my M1 Pro, and I'll report it to you. We can figure out how much faster the M4 or M4 Pro is.
Actually, I have a file, a single file I've been using to do a constant comparison.
Yeah, no, so send it to me.
I'll send you that particular one, Ben. But also, it depends on the model you choose, And also, I learned that apparently, I paid for Whisper Sync, which is this great Mac app that gets you to all the LLMs. The OpenAI LLMs, I believe, for doing transcription work, and you can choose between large, small, whatever. The bigger you go, the longer the transcription takes, because it's doing a lot of that big sort of data. It's doing a lot of data sorting. And what I've learned is that there is another version of WhisperSync on the App Store that is fully subscription based. And honestly, it feels like a little bit of a scam, because you're paying them 30 euros, it's in euros. You could pay them 60 euros for a lifetime thing, or 30 euros annually or something. If you go to their website and just buy Mac Whisper, it's the same thing. There's no subscription.
And it's just a wrapper for a OpenAI thing, right?
That's really all it is, too. But it is just wild to me that this app can exist that is a subscription thing that will constantly be taking money from some people, but go to their website and you can just buy it like a piece of software that you own. That's just wild to me. So anyway, Whisper Sync is good, but watch out for that App Store version, folks. Well, let's move on to some other news. You want to shout out something, Ben.
Yeah, so a lot of other stuff in the world is up in the air, but one thing that I did want to talk about was the New York Times tech workers have been on strike since Monday the 4th.
Shout out to them. Yeah.
That's right. Monday the 4th, right before Election Day. People were saying, actually, there was a, I think, Semaphore article talking about wow, the New York Times tech workers are going on strike right before the needle is really important.
They really need that needle was the bane of my existence that night, but yeah.
I think that the needle might run on a Mac Pro or something, and this might be like an old Mac Pro too. I remember seeing a picture of the actual like computer that ran the needle. And I know that people online, this was back when Twitter was more usable a few years ago, people were commenting under that tweet, just like really shaking their fists at that one computer because of how much psychic damage that machine did to them.
A lot of emotional damage, yeah.
Anyway, we've got the New York Times tech workers are on strike because they said they wanted to unionize. They announced it 2 years ago. The New York Times leadership has not recognized the union. It has not like agreed to terms of like a union contract. So they're going on strike and they've asked people to not cross the click it line. Click it line. But it's very important because what does the New York Times Tech Guild do? It does Wordle, it does Connections, it does all the New York Times games and the New York Times cooking app. That is the way a lot of people I know interact with the New York Times most often. They might not be huge, huge news hounds, but they have a New York Times subscription for these extra fun things. And a lot of people I know are also, they're really concerned about making sure that like workers get their due. So they're like, oh my God, I'm letting my, you know, very long Connections or Wordle streak go because I don't want to cross
that,
the ticket,
that really does mean
the click it line.
Yeah.
But now you can do something else because the New York Times workers have released their own games that you can play while they're striking. You can have fun. You can support them. There are also links to their GoFundMe to support the workers while they're striking. I think it's a good like midway point. Also wanted to shout out another couple of games that I've heard people talk about in the same breath as like all the New York Times games. I know some people like to play Redactyl, which is Wikipedia articles, and there's just a bunch of redacted words, and you have to like guess the words to eventually guess the article. I think that that's really cool. That could be fun, but it's definitely hard because I'm looking at one of the games now, and I'm seeing, you know, 50 or more words redacted. So you have to be really good at inferring what those might be from context clues. So in addition to Redactyl, I also heard about this other game called MetaZoa, which is guessing a specific animal based on like phylogenetic rankings. So you have to really know your taxonomy, and you know you have to guess if it's a eukaryote or prokaryote or whatever, and then eventually you know you'll get all the way down to like, hey, it's a garter snake or it's a, you know, silverback gorilla or something. So if you like did a bunch of biology in school and you're looking for a similar game that also doesn't have you crossing the New York Times picket line, check that out maybe.
Gotcha. I don't know. My wife plays Connections, so occasionally she will throw an idea to me and I help her like figure it out, but I'm just not super compelled. I love the sort of ecosystem that has popped up around these. I know for cinema fans and movie lovers, there are different ones. There's framed.wtf. So those are all fun. I love the ideas. Just they get. I remember when Wordle first came out too, I would start playing with everybody else and I just got super annoyed and frustrated with how brutal it could be at times. Because the whole catch of Wordle is you start guessing. Just start guessing the word and hope it works out. Let's move on to our picks of the week. I just want to shout out a thing that has helped keep me sane a little bit. And I forget, did I mention this last week? I don't think
no,
I did.
You didn't.
Okay, so the second season of The Diplomat, the wonderful Netflix series, is out. It is fantastic. Stars Kerry Russell and Rufus Sewell. Two of the most beautiful people alive, at least to me. It's about a woman who's sort of a career diplomat is tapped to be the, you know, the America's chief diplomat for the UK, but also the subplot is they want her to be vice president. So this is sort of like a trial run to see if she can even handle such a big role. I really love the first season. It's really smart. I love shows about smart people doing smart things really well. So it's very Aaron Sorkin-y, very West Wing-esque. The creator, Deborah Kahn, used to write on the West Wing. But she also used to write on Grey's Anatomy. So there's a lot of fun soapiness to the show, too, that you wouldn't expect. It's also set entirely in the UK. So you have a lot of scenes in just like gorgeous, you know, manors and sometimes castles. It is a good looking show. It's a really well-written show. It's a show about people like trying to do their best to keep democracy alive and keep our society together. And it could be a little fun and soapy at times, too. Season two.
It seems relevant.
Season two adds Allison Janney, CJ Craig herself from the West Wing, and she is playing the vice president, the current vice president. It is delicious. I had a lot of fun with this. I just finished the second season yesterday, and it ends in such a way that I screamed out loud, and for a half second, I forgot about the world we were living in. And I think that alone does it. But the show knows how to do those episodic cliffhangers. There are only 6 episodes in the second season, I think, because of production issues and whatnot. But man, is it good. The Diplomat is so good. If you want to feel good about, not necessarily good about politics, because a lot of it is also about how terrible America and the UK can be when it comes to foreign relations, but just about people trying to do good in the world, I think it's really, really compelling. Do you have anything, Ben?
Yeah, and I've probably mentioned it before, but I am thinking a lot about the works of Becky Chambers, especially thinking about the Monk and Robot series. It is really good solar punk. It is, you know, talking about a much better world where we're living in closer harmony with nature, but also you still have, you know, all of the modern comforts of your phones, computers, and laptops. And that's what I'm looking toward right now. That's making me feel better about the world.
I also did read Ta-Nehisi Coates' The Message, and also a good time. Good time for that, because I think that is a lot super relevant to everything.
So there was a lot that was focused on like the section about Gaza. Tell me more about that book in general, though.
I mean, in general, the book is about his experience going to Africa. I think it was Senegal, but going to Africa for the first time, kind of tracing the roots of the beginnings of slavery, tracing his own connection to Africa itself, and then also to America. You know, I think it was near Chicago as well. His work traces a lot of roots about America and America's history and its sort of influence on the world, but also the things that drive us as a country. I think it's really insightful, unflinching, especially when it comes to the Gaza stuff. And I think just really, really necessary. So it has also been wild to see him like go to, you know, do news interviews where somebody is responding to his books and he just laughs and like, that's the most racist thing I've ever heard. And that's just, that's great. That's just a review of my book. Anyway, I really enjoyed it. I listened to the audiobook, actually. So he is reading the audiobook. I love the sound of his voice and the way he reads his own text. I'm getting more and more into audiobooks because I think a lot of podcasts have just, listen, sometimes we just get tired of listening to people, you know, banter around a microphone and they don't actually know what they're talking about. Trust me, folks, I'm aware of it. I do a lot of podcasting, but I also try to be really, really cognizant of that fact. But Audible.
I actually saw something recently about how the podcast subreddit accidentally invents audiobooks.
Yes.
There's a self-post to the podcast subreddit that's like, I wish that there was a podcast that was just like one person telling a story.
For like 20
or
hours.
Something.
Yeah.
Yeah. For like, you know, that would really, you know, help me like while I'm doing the dishes or, you know, it'd be a great thing to fall asleep to because like different speakers
those
like might
too.
Wake me up or something. But hey guys, you want audiobooks, actually.
I'm still listening to the Power Brokers audiobook. That thing is like 70 to 80 hours long.
Yep.
You know?
Yep. That is 2 full work weeks.
It is. I used to be not super into audiobooks because what I realized is I was listening to like fiction books or narrative audiobooks. And my brain, because of the way I realized my brain just cannot follow the story as well. But if it's sort of like nonfiction or if it's somebody talking about news or something like that, or scientific concepts, I can follow it more like the way I follow podcasts. So I have been doing sort of like drip feeding actual knowledge into my brain because I can't always make time to read full books. I've been doing the Audible thing, unfortunately, because they have a corner. They have basically monopolized the entire audiobook industry. But it is worth it to get access to some other information. I'm doing the subscription. It's good stuff. And yeah, read the message however you can. I still call it reading. I could say I'm listening to an audiobook, but I have still consumed that book and the information in it. But certainly when I read, like when I read a fiction book, like the way I process language is different. So I have bought Jeff Vandermeer's book, his most recent one, which goes back to The World of Annihilation. Like reading his language is one thing, because hearing that spoken aloud would be even harder to process, I think. So anyway, that's what's up with me. I hope folks out there, you know, things are tough right now. Find the things that help you, that help keep you from despairing too much.
That's it for our episode. Thank you for listening. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our former managing editor, Terrence O'Brien. This podcast is produced by me, Ben Elman. You can find Devendra online at...
I'm online at Devendra pretty much everywhere, but I'm trying to spend more time on Blue Sky now that officially Twitter is... It's just getting harder and harder to see what's going on there because I'm just getting a lot of MAGA spam now. I wonder why Elon Musk is letting that get through. I don't know. He doesn't run a tight enough ship. But yeah, I'm at Devendra at most places. Find me on Blue Sky, though.
You can find me at the inbox for the podcast@engadget.com. Send us a nice note. Leave us a review on iTunes and subscribe on anything that gets podcasts. That includes Spotify.
Thanks, folks. We're out.